Iran's parliament speaker says the 2015 nuclear deal was meant to lift sanctions on Iran, and what matters to the country now is the removal of all bans, practically. More U.S. Republican lawmakers join calls for President Trump to step down as Democrats push for his impeachment over the storming of the Capitol. And a senior official of Scotland's pro-independence ruling party calls Brexit an unnecessary act of economic vandalism, demanding compensation. So glad to have you with us. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Well, Iran's parliament speaker says the country will fulfill its commitments under the 2015 nuclear deal if other parties keep their side of the bargain. Mohammed Baqir Ghalibaf says Iran's nuclear accord with world powers is not, quote, a holy document. He says the deal was meant to lift sanctions on Iran, and what matters to the country now is the removal of all bans, practically. The top parliamentarian says Iran must be able to sell its oil, trade with the world, and have access to the global banking system. Outgoing U.S. President Donald Trump walked out of the multilateral pact in 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Iran. However, U.S. President-elect Joe Biden has promised to re-enter the deal. Meanwhile, Tehran says there will be no fundamental changes in Washington's anti-Iran policy under the new U.S. administration. Iran's ambassador to the United Nations says the U.S.'s international policies are not dependent on its administrations, whether they are Republican or Democrat. Majid Takhravanchi also slammed the Trump administration for its unconventional policies, noting that Washington's actions were unpredictable for observers both in and outside of the United States. He said the policies which will be adopted by Joe Biden's administration may look different, but will be the same at their core. And now it's time for this hour's news review. Calls are growing among U.S. lawmakers to impeach President Donald Trump after he incited his supporters that led to the storming of the Capitol building on Wednesday. Democrat members of the House of Representatives are set to introduce articles of impeachment on Monday. Nearly 200 Democrats have co-sponsored the articles on Saturday night. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has asked members to draft legislation aimed at invoking the Constitution's 25th Amendment that allows for stripping powers from a president unable to fulfill the duties of the office. Meanwhile, a growing number of Republican lawmakers have also joined calls for Trump to step down. Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska has suggested Trump should resign immediately and consider leaving the party. Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania has also said he would consider impeachment because the president has disregarded his oath of office. I'd like to welcome my guest to this news review. Out of London, lecturer of Coventry University, Kenneth Ferro, and out of Hull Seth, the journalist and historian, editor at Uprising, Brett Youngers. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start it off with Kenneth. Kenneth, your take on all of this. I mean, there are just a few days left to the Trump administration. Do you think that they're actually going to impeach him again? And what kind of effect would it have if they do?
Well, I very much doubt it. This is all part of the Trump show. The president, when he was elected, promised something different, and that's what the Americans wanted, and that's what the Americans have got. I think if we look at this incident, apart from the impeachment, which is absolutely ridiculous, he's been there for 4 years causing all this damage, and suddenly some Republicans are coming forward saying they really don't want him in power anymore. I mean, it's too little, too late. But beyond that, you know, this incident symbolized the difference between the American dream, which is this idea of democracy, freedom of speech, and equality, with the reality of America, which is the American nightmare for most people, which is stupidity, violence, and inequality. So what happened on the Capitol and what this impeachment is really not about, and what it should be about, was the fact that we have a president who is encouraging violence, but also a president and a country which is steeped in violence. Its entire history is based on violence. So it's no surprise to me, those pictures and those actions of the far right, supported by Trump and encouraged by Trump. The other thing is the stupidity of this situation. You know, a group of people, of far-right protesters, invade this so-called sacrosanct building of the United States, and a US Army a veteran is shot dead. We have somebody else who electrocutes themselves through using a stun gun on their own testicles. And then we have these stupid images of quite demented people running around the Capitol. So this image of violence and stupidity is not a surprise, and no impeachment and no removing of President Trump will make any difference to the images that came out, which I think represent the American nightmare. The mm-hmm. other thing to say, of course, and that's been brought up before, is that, you know, we have far-right white supremacists attacking the Capitol, and people have rightly said, if this was BLM protesters, we'd be talking about much more than five people dead at this time. So I think that's a symbol of the inequality of Americans and of how they treat these issues.
Okay.
So I think in terms of impeachment, it's far too little, far too late. It's hypocrisy on the part of the Republicans. And we have to remember also that the majority of Republicans still support Trump. The votes in the Senate still went ahead, the procedure still went ahead, and we have you know, senators led by Cruz who actually insisted on trying to do something about stopping the election, even after those incidents. And I think that is the height of arrogance from the Republican Party.
Okay, stay with me, stay with me, Kenneth. Let me get Brett in on this conversation. Brett, when we look at the situation, there are others who say, just like Kenneth talked about, symbolic of the violence coming of the U.S., is coming out of the U.S. in general, is what we saw on Capitol Hill. But there are others that say that one of the main reasons that there are more problems with Trump than other presidents is because that actually he allowed the actual image of America to be seen during these 4 years, whether it's dealing with foreign countries and how raw he was and violent many times he was. And of course, without the usual niceties as far as wordings and actions, but actually other presidents, whether Democrat or Republican, did similar actions, especially when we're talking about other countries, except they use better language. So with the existence of Trump as president of the U.S., the facade of the U.S. being a democracy, the facade of the U.S. being a fair player in the world, a balancing player in the world, actually that facade was destroyed. And many in the elite part political sector of the United States also had problems with Trump because of that. Your take?
I think that is absolutely correct. There is a growing discomfort amongst the American elite with the fact that Donald Trump is completely breaking protocol of American presidents in trying to keep on somewhat of a humanitarian visage. The biggest con artist, the best one, I think, that we have seen recently, of course, was President Barack Obama, with the suave-looking African-American, so to speak, president, who spoke on the left, let's say, spoke progressive, but for the rest did everything that George Bush and all the predecessors of his did before him. Donald Trump is not a con artist in this way. Donald Trump is a person who says what he wants to say, who says what he thinks. And the problem is that what he thinks is often something that sounds very, very rough, very brazen, very rash, even though it definitely corresponds with the way the United States normally does things. But you see that Donald Trump has engaged in certain actions and activities that are considered to be a little bit over the top, at least in terms of publicity. For the United States. Of course, he has assassinated Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mehdi al-Mohandes in an attack that was completely unprovoked. There was no reason for it. He has, at certain points, brought the country at the brink of total war against both Iran and later against China. These are all matters that were done in a way that are considered to be not, let's say, strategically beneficial to the United States. Normally, there have to be years and years of propaganda war. There have to be some sort of a shock of effect, psychological effect, psyop operation, that precedes a United States operation like this. For example, think of the years and years of the war on terror propaganda that the Americans have used to justify their conflict against Afghanistan against Iraq, that have and for a long time lulled a lot of Americans and Westerners in general into a false sense of thinking that they were on the right side of history in these conflicts. But Donald Trump has not really taken the time or the effort to do this. He went straight like a bull attacking a toreador, you know, straight against the into battle. And this is something that has definitely damaged, I think, the image of the United States abroad, especially with their Western allies. And this is something that we have seen now as well when it comes to domestically, that the United States has always tried to keep up some sort of image of being the shining city on the hill, as they call themselves, you know, sort of a bastion of democracy and freedom, mm-hmm. which everyone who really looks into it knows, of course, that this is not true. But their American dream propaganda has always been incredibly efficient up until recently. Donald Trump, on the other hand, has openly spoken several times that he supports certain white supremacist groups, supports a group that can commit violence, not just abroad, but also at home. He told the Proud Boys, this militia, to stand by, his literal quote. He has said that he does not believe that white supremacy is a major issue, even when they were holding torchlight gatherings and started killing people in Charlottesville. These are he has an immediate connection to white supremacist groups that are tied with the Ku Klux Klan and organizations such as that. So he has thrown off the veneer completely and went full on, basically full on oligarch, full on white supremacist and pseudo-fascist, so to say. And this is something that has, I believe, scared a lot of Republicans and Democrats alike, but even a lot of Republicans into wanting to abandon him. And indeed, as the other speaker said just now, there is a massive amount of hypocrisy in these Republicans that now drop him and now say, this is not who we are, this is not the GOP, this is not my party. These people have supported, in many cases, supported the Republican Party throughout the presidencies of Bush, sometimes as far back as Reagan, and all the crimes and aggressions that have been committed by Republicans and Democrats alike against countries in the Global South and in the Third World. But now they decide to drop him because a bunch of crazy people went into the Capitol building during a Congress session and you know, trashed Nancy Pelosi's office, as if that is the worst crime you can commit. That is why, as much as I loathe President Trump and his entourage, I must at least say that I have a certain form of, let's say, respect for the people who still stand by him. At least they stand by their principles, whereas these Republicans who now drop him as a brick into the sea are people who only think of themselves, I believe, and think of their career under a Democrat, the future Democrat Joe Biden presidency, and might be even contemplating their maybe switching parties, or at least making sure that they have somewhat of a bipartisan backing for their own careers. I definitely have no respect for opportunists such as that.
All right. And on that note, I thank both of you for being with us. Kenneth Farrell, lecturer at Coventry University out of London. Brett Yonkers, journalist and historian, editor at Uprising. All set. Well, the U.S. Secretary of State says he is lifting restrictions on contacts between American officials and their Taiwanese counterparts. In a statement, Mike Pompeo said for several decades, Washington has created restrictions on interactions of American diplomats, service members, and other officials with Taiwanese counterparts. Pompeo said the restrictions were previously imposed, quote, to appease the communist regime in Beijing. While the move is likely to anger China and increase tensions between the two countries in the last days of Donald Trump's presidency. Ken Dushu, a senior fellow at the Pangol Institution, says Washington's decision to lift restrictions on contact with Taiwan is another provocative move against Beijing.
This is very provoking. You know, that's why Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson called the move as the final madness of this Trump administration. And usually, in the last days of administration like this, you know, they play a role of caretaker, basically taking care of the normal business to make sure there is a power transition. Of course, there's, you know, big trouble in the U.S. The regime is in its final days, and Pompeo's days are numbered at the Secretary of State. he is making such a move, I think he's creating a trouble for the incoming administration led by Biden. So that will make Biden in a very kind of dilemma. You know, if they want to roll back, they will face criticism for so-called being soft to Beijing. If they don't do, that will create trouble in their relationship with Beijing. And in terms of China-U.S. relations, we know that Trump and Pompeo, in particular Pompeo, I would say, in last year, he has been pushing hard for a second version of a Cold War against the rise of China. He's sort of like a desperate, trying to sabotage the relationship between the two countries. Taiwan is one of the cards he has used against Beijing, along with Xinjiang, Hong Kong, Tibet, etc.
Scotland's pro-independence ruling party has called on British Prime Minister Boris Johnson to pay billions of pounds in compensation for the growing costs and disruptions caused by Brexit. Well, the leader of the Scottish National Party in the British Parliament said Johnson's Conservative must apologize to Scottish businesses for the long-term damage caused by Brexit. Ian Blackford called Brexit an unnecessary act of economic vandalism pushed against the will of Scotland. Scots voted against Brexit in the 2016 referendum. Well, fishermen in Scotland and elsewhere in the UK are angered by their loss of access to the European market due to increased bureaucracy caused by Brexit. This has worsened by Johnson's failure to take back full control of fishing waters after the UK left the European Union on January the 1st. Well, more people in Europe fall victim to COVID-19 as the virus continues to rage on through the continent. In the UK, nearly 60,000 more people tested positive on Saturday, pushing its caseload to over 3 million since the pandemic began a year ago. A further 1,035 deaths take the overall fatalities there to more than 80,000. Britain is one of the worst-hit countries in Europe. Concerns grow since the country reported cases of a more contagious COVID variant last month. Elsewhere in Europe, the number of fatalities in Belgium has crossed 20,000. According to Belgian health officials, more than half of the dead reported from retirement care homes. Germany has so far recorded over 40,000 COVID-related fatalities and over 1.9 million confirmed cases. Indonesian investigators have discovered body parts and debris where an airliner crashed shortly after takeoff from the capital, Jakarta. Police say search teams have so far sent back two bags, one containing passenger belongings and the other body parts. Search operations are still underway. According to the Indonesian Transport Minister, the airliner deviated from its route before losing contact minutes after takeoff. Authorities say the 26-year-old Boeing 737-500 was in good condition, but the flight had been delayed by 30 minutes due to heavy rain. The passengers, at least 62 crew and passengers, included 10 children, were on board the plane, which was heading to the city of Pontianak. Now to Pakistan, where officials there say power is gradually being restored to major cities after the national power grid failure plunged the entire country into darkness. Authorities say power supply has been restored to most areas of Punjab province, as well as the southern port city of Karachi. They, however, say people in some areas in Lahore and Karachi remain without electricity. Now, the Saturday night power outage was Pakistan's second major breakdown in less than 3 years. The power minister said the latest blackout was caused by an engineering fault in southern Pakistan. He said experts are trying to determine the exact location of the fault, which they so far have not been able to identify. And with that story, brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you all so much for staying with us. We'll be right back.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. Aperture.
Welcome back to Aperture. We witnessed the spectacular and awe-inspiring natural beauty of the Kaluts, or Yardangs, in the western part of Dashtalut in Iran. Rising up to 80 meters, these streamlined ridges have been carved by the wind out of the clay and sand lining the desert floor, creating a magnificent array of high-rising sculptures and lying parallel to the prevailing winds. The Yardangs are some of the world's most prominent. Stay with us as we follow Javad Gharayi, an Iranian nature explorer and documentary filmmaker, as he introduces more of Iran's desert wonders to us.
Early the next morning, I was still sleepy and tired, but some of the most beautiful natural views revealed themselves in the moments before sunrise. The cold and the dark couldn't stop me from exploring the natural beauties near my camp. The early hours of morning in the natural world fills you with energy. Filled to the brim with that energy that emanates from the peace and tranquility bestowed upon this land by God Almighty. I started my day that promised to be a good one. I spent 3 hours exploring the areas around my tent, taking beautiful photos of the unmatched scenery of the Kaluts, a precious gift by Mother Nature to those who appreciate her. It was time for me to leave the imaginary city of Kalutz, a city with great potential for becoming a destination for responsible tourists and nature travelers. The most beautiful natural scenes should either be visited in the early hours of morning or sometime around sundown. I got up at 6 o'clock this morning and was able to take spectacular snaps of the natural beauties around here with this very camera. I have to say, I love Iran with all my being because of its very rich culture and its remarkably diverse natural beauties. It's time to go now. I have to pack up. I gotta put my tent back into my backpack and head out for the Kalutz again. This is my last day here. I can't stay here much longer because I'm running out of food and water. Not only the Kalutz, but the entire vast Lut region are considered as an invaluable natural museum in the world. All by itself, the Lut Desert is home to a world of numerous beauties, the like of which are scattered in different places across our planet. Without a doubt, it's among the most beautiful deserts on Earth. The Yalon mega dunes with their rare views, the Kalutz, the star-shaped dunes, the beautiful valleys in the heart of Lut, the hottest part of Dashtalut, which is Gandum Merian, a large plateau covered in dark lava, the unique vegetation, including small trees named Saxols, the Martian or miniature mountains on the fringes of Lut, the central hole, the Dolphin Valley comprised of rock formations eroded by wind, Dashtakashk, and the plant and animal species endemic to Lut. Add to all that the villages with their unique desert architecture, people whose cultures go back 6,000 years. My GPS is telling me I've walked around 36 kilometers through the Kalutz. This is nearly the end of my trek into the Kalutz. Another very beautiful feature of the Kalutz of Kerman, in other words, the Kalutz of Shahdad, is the Nepka Forest Park. These very beautiful plants you see behind me here are in fact the trees that have formed this Nepka Forest Park. Only two species, salt cedars and saxols, which have grown here and created this beautiful and unique landscape. This area obviously looks different from others. The Nepka's forest park forms the vegetation on the fringe of the Kalut area. But this green patch fades away as you move from the cold mountains of Sirj to the hot, dry Kalutz. And in the heart of the Kalutz, there is hardly any vegetation at all. But Mother Nature has created a matchless forest in the area between the Sirj mountains and the Kalutz. This strange land formation I'm standing next to is not your simple hill. It is the world's biggest natural vase known as the Nepka. This phenomenon is called Nepka in the African Sahara, Shur Moro in the central areas of Iran, and Talagaz by those living on the eastern and southeastern plains of Iran. When sandstorms blow past the vegetation in this area, they leave behind some of the dirt and sand at the foot of these plants. When the wind blows, some of the sand and dirt is trapped in the trees and crashes to the ground, creating a mound over time. In order to survive, the trees use their long roots to absorb water and other nutrients buried underground. The dirt around the shrubs and trees contain more moisture. This relative moisture keeps the sand and earth in place around the plant. Of course, that leads to a portion of the trunk, branches, and leaves being buried, which in turn contributes to the solidification of the sand near the plant. Every natural NEPCA vase is named according to the species it hosts. The NEPCAs are called Talagaz or Talitog by the locals in this region. Another unique feature of Lute are these same NEPCAs. They are the tallest natural vases in the world. The NEPCAs of this kind have been seen in Africa too, but the ones in Africa are barely 3 meters tall. At their tallest, the NEPCAs in Iran are 10 meters tall. Normally, NEPCAs grow on flat surfaces. They best grow on moist land. The shape of the NEPCA depends on the size, density, and growth rate of the host plant. In this NEPCA forest, the dominant species is the salt cedar. Goodness, it looks more like a miracle. Just look how God instilled the hope for life in these salt cedars and saxols. When they're just small seedlings, winds dump massive amounts of sand onto them, but driven by their strong will to live, they continue to grow in order to survive. The battle between the wind and sand on one hand and these trees on the other has been going on forever. It's been around for millions of years. But what is really very important is that hope keeps everything and everyone alive. And these trees, because of their intrinsic sense of hope, the will for life, put their roots down and stand tall. They continue to grow as a means of survival. It's going to become stormy very soon. Desert storms are very dangerous. So what you need to do is find shelter somewhere or leave that area immediately. Fortunately, I'm very close to my next destination and I think I'm not going to run into any trouble. But I have to get going immediately or I'm going to get sand and dirt all over my body and stuff. My camera crew and I were taken off guard by the sudden change of weather and the subsequent sandstorm. One of the biggest powers of nature in a desert is the ability of sand and dust to penetrate each and every orifice during a storm, and our equipment was no exception. Sandstorms are among the biggest dangers of a desert. In some cases, such storms continue to blow for days and can cost nature travelers their lives. But there are other dangers lurking in other parts of this vast plain. Therefore, the best way to ensure a safe trip to Lute is to make the necessary arrangements with the relevant authorities in Kerman province and the city of Shahdad. From Shahdad, I had to walk around 250 kilometers to the west of the province, to a place only 15 kilometers away from Rafsanjan. Kerman is a province with limited water resources. Many of the deep wells in the province have dried up. But deep in the heart of Rafsanjan's crisis-hit nature, there is a canyon that sparkles like a diamond. You might be thinking this isn't Iran, that I'm speaking to you from another country. But you're wrong. This is our beloved Iran, and I'm now standing atop a scary deep canyon, the rugged Grand Canyon of Rafsanjan. Valleys and canyons are strange yet beautiful natural phenomena, and they become even more beautiful if their emergence is not the result of orogeny, Rather, if it's the result of thousands or millions of years of erosion by wind, sand, and water of flat plains. Raga Grand Canyon is one such ravine, a peerless, pristine valley in Kerman Province. I was amazed at the view of the canyon from above. The pointed cones, the big and small columns carved out by erosion, the arcs, the partitions and wall-like strips were only a few of all the beautiful features of this canyon. Raga is around 20 kilometers long. Its width varies between 3 and 100 kilometers, and in some places it is around 80 meters deep. Walking on top of it could have been very dangerous. My goodness, it's really scary, but it's magnificent at the same time. At this point, I think it's around 70 meters deep from where I'm standing. If I fall into it, there will be nothing left of me. It's dangerous to be here because the earth here is very soft and can slide at any moment. So you'll have to keep a safe distance while walking along these beautiful walls. It's ruggedly beautiful indeed. You can get the most beautiful view of the canyon from up here, but every side of it offers its own unique beauty. What I'm really happy about is the fact that there is no construction work happening anywhere in a 20-kilometer radius. There are no roads. That's why this ravine has maintained its pristine status, and of course, the area around it too. My hope is that we can preserve this untouched ravine and its surroundings the way they are and leave them to the next generation, and they to the generation that comes after them, just like the way it looks now. I hope so. The canyon's geomorphology and its pristine environs made for beautiful scenery, and that had provided a good habitat for certain species of animals in and around it. This region and this gorge are so intact, they've become home to various species of birds, such as eagles that have built their nests in recesses high on the walls where they feel safe. I'm very excited and counting every minute for the walk on the bed of the canyon, but the best time to do it would be tomorrow because I don't have enough time for it today. Raga Canyon is a good destination for geologists and nature travelers venturing into the Lute. The vegetation, such as salt cedar trees in some parts of the canyon, made the canyon even more beautiful. From the bottom up, ravines look just as beautiful. I walked along much of Raga Canyon from above and captured many beautiful views of it, but it was now time to go down to the bottom of it. This part of the wall is solid. It's hard to walk on. It's very steep too, as you can see. You have to take a lot of care going down. My God, yes! At the bottom, the canyon was beautiful and scary. I kept thinking its walls were going to come crashing down any minute. Walking at the foot of those majestic walls, I felt how little and weak I was compared to the canyon and to its creator. On one hand, the beautiful long natural statues, and on the other, the tunnel-shaped arcs carved into the walls were all astonishing. Statues chiseled by gravity pulling down the dirt and pebbles on the walls of the ravine. The view down here is simply breathtaking. The huge, majestic statues carved out on the walls of the canyon have taken thousands of years to be made. As loose earth from the top of the canyon cascaded down to the bottom over the years, it created these beautiful shapes on these walls. They are stunning. Some of them look like humans, and others like certain animals. The canyon is just as beautiful down on its bed as it is from above. The dry tree, in fact, there are many others scattered across the ravine. Floodwaters on the highlands and on the plains sweep them up along with some of the trees that grow at the mouth of the canyon in spring and dump them over here. It's a bizarre scene here. It's very dangerous to come here in the spring season because floodwaters are deadly. Exploration is among the most interesting fields in nature traveling. There are many adventurers around the world who are in love with exploring valleys and canyons. But this field of sport comes with its own hidden dangers. The collapse of the walls or falling from the edge of a canyon's walls are among those dangers. But there's another more serious threat to the life of nature travelers, which is seasonal floodwaters caused by rainfall. Just take a look at what seasonal rivers have done to these walls. The water can be around 2 meters deep here at the time of a flood and can be fatal. Whenever I travel to a place like this, I study up on its weather and climate before I set out so I won't run into any trouble. So when it's raining, you better not be anywhere near the bottom of any ravine. Although Raga Canyon is very wide and the floodwaters flowing in pose a less serious threat, it is likely for torrential rain to come down in the nearby areas. And that means flash floods at a certain time during a day or night or a whole day. So at a time like that, you better not come here. Most nature travelers take all kinds of precautions prior to their adventure. But most of them don't pay much attention to the climate of the places they travel to. They don't take the weather forecasts very seriously. In 2005, 11 mountaineers from Ghazvin, with all their equipment and years of experience, entered Andres Canyon in Alborz province. But because they had ignored the weather forecast and the predicted rain, they had an accident. During rainfalls, valleys and canyons that offer no escapes are the most dangerous places in the natural world to be. In that year, heavy rain set off floodwaters in Andres Canyon, and unfortunately, it took the lives of all 11 mountaineers. Therefore, the most important thing that natural explorers should take into account is the weather forecast, the difficulty of the route they're traveling on, and their mental and physical strength for the trip ahead. You can't put a price tag on the environment. All those who walk into nature speak of it as a cathartic experience and absorb massive amounts of positive energy. In my opinion, because the natural world is a manifestation of the greatness and beauty of God, I have walked a very long distance. I'm about to arrive at the end of the canyon. I'm going to have to get out of it before dark sets in, concluding another leg of my trip. It's very easy to pollute your environment, but that's not right. It only goes to show how irresponsible we humans can be. We have to take responsibility for the environment in our country and in the entire planet. We mustn't dump our garbage out in the open and instead send it to the recycling system. We must treat nature the same way we do our homes. Only then can we say we are committed to other humans, to the planet Earth, and to future generations. I'm approaching the end of my trip. I have no doubt that many of my countrymen and women are not familiar with the beautiful natural wonders of Kerman province. And many of the officials in the province don't seem to be aware of the great potential these natural wonders have as tourist destinations. In addition to its old history and culture, the province boasts unique natural features on a par with their counterparts in the rest of the world. In the developed world, development doesn't include building roads, hotels, and tourism centers in the heart of the environment. In the century we live in, development and progress is tantamount to the unconditional and responsible preservation of the environment, and sustainable development of the tourism industry can easily set in motion the big wheels of the country's economy. The environment in Iran is very fragile and sensitive, but with proper professional preservation and protection, by people and officials alike, it can turn into a big generator of jobs and revenues, provided that we appreciate what we have and do all we can to preserve what's left of Iran's untapped natural world. We should perish the thought of construction on it.
I'm sure you'll agree with me that Iran's deserts, with their varied and dramatic landscapes of canyons, yardangs, and their beautiful flora and fauna, are a unique destination for the demanding traveler to discover a wealth of exceptional and unspoiled views. And that's it for this week. Do keep in touch with us, and until next week, goodbye.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, a wise person versus a foolish person. The wise person will pay attention to what is more urgent and more needed. He wouldn't waste too much time on anything less important. While the foolish person will do exactly the opposite. A wise man is the one who calls himself to account and refrains from doing evil deeds and does noble deeds, for instance, to benefit him after death. And the foolish person, on the other hand, is the one who subdues himself to his temptations and desires and seeks from Allah the fulfillment of his vain desires. How many times do we feel that there are people in the society who believe in a program given by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, but they do not actively pursue those programs and goals. On the other hand, their expectation from Allah is to bless them with the aftermath and the blessings of carrying out those deeds. Well, guess what? You have not carried out those deeds. Those important actions you have not carried out in your lifetime. Why in the world would you expect Allah to pay you for it? Do you get paid without going to work, without fulfilling your responsibility, or, you know, writing a research paper? Do you think your teacher is going to or expected to give you an A grade? Of course not. You have to put in the effort, you have to work towards that goal if you expect to be paid and rewarded for what you just did. So a wise person is always vigilant and makes sure that he's working towards that goal, seeking reward. But a foolish person doesn't work towards that goal, but yet seeks reward. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are talking about a wise person versus a foolish person. Now, a wise, rational, firm person is he who manages things well, and he looks at the consequences and takes care of the required precaution. On the other hand, a foolish person is short-sighted, who follows his whims and does not look beyond his nose. Whenever he has a desire, he follows it. Every time the desire calls him, he will commit to fulfill it. The rational person knows that this world is temporary and it will end. You know, to say the least, our lives are going to end. Do we know anyone who has not died, who has come to this world and has not died and is not or never going to die? Of course not. And that, you know, this hereafter is an eternal bliss that does not pass away and does not end. This is established. We know that. So there is no good reason for a person to struggle with everything just for temporary terms and not preparing for the eternal term. This, in other words, can be called insanity. If you know something is long-term, if you know something that is permanent, you're of course going to prioritize that particular domain. But if you know that something is very temporary, why in the world would you invest anything in that temporary thing? Right? A wise person would never do that. This world is temporary. At least for an individual, it's temporary. You know, even if we don't talk about the philosophical, you know, annihilation and completion of the life of this world, at an individual level, we know that we're going to die. So work towards something that is going to be rewarding in long term. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What you heard was an IRIB English Radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.